There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right here, right now.
This week's Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by Electrify America, and we're so happy to be partnering with Electrify America until the end of the year. With Electrify America, you can drive your EV from coast to coast with more than 650 charging stations nationwide and new locations opening every week. Electrify America is bringing EV drivers the freedom they need. Whether you want to plan a weekend getaway, maybe you're off to see some friends or relatives, maybe it's a coast-to-coast road trip, you can ask our Kyle about how that's done using Electrify America charging stations. Well, you can rely on Electrify America's ultra-fast chargers to get you back on the road faster. So, where will you go charging on Electrify America? Let us know in the comments below. We'd love to hear what your plans are for this weekend, and tell us where you'll go next. And you can learn more at electrifyamerica.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for December the 17th, 2021. This is episode number 89. Our topics today: Toyota announces its electrification plan, Hyundai Ioniq 5 gets some U.S. pricing, and I've changed it. I was going to say before, GMC teases its Sierra Denali, but then we had some other news last night that popped. All right, anyway, let's just move on to the show. So, I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the newly refreshed Tom Malachny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the marvelous Mr. Martin Lee from EV News Daily Podcast, which, of course, is available on all the best podcast platforms. And, of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic halls of Autospec Studios. He also puts together mesmerizing videos for the Inside EV's YouTube channel. Okay, before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the show. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications. If you're watching us on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right, so with that out of the way, welcome everybody. Okay, let's talk about what we've been driving this week. Tom, you're just fresh back from vacation, but you're also sick, and we're glad to have you here this morning, but your voice isn't quite up to snuff. But I was wondering if you could tell us just a little bit about the Porsche Taycan GTS Sport Turismo, because the driving impressions were embargoed for like quite a while now, but I think we can talk about it today, right?
Yeah, we can talk about it today, and nice to be back, but definitely, as Dominic noted, I'm a little bit under the weather. I got my full vacation in great condition, but then the last day when we're packing to come home, I started getting sick, and been sick ever since, but starting to feel better now. We got to drive the Taycan GTS sedan and GTS Sport Turismo way back about three or four weeks ago, I forget. And the GTS Sport Turismo was embargoed till just this week. We were able to talk about the GTS sedan a week or so earlier. So we just put up the video about the GTS Sport Turismo. I think Kyle has one on his channel too also, right, Kyle?
No video. We do have some like TikTok short videos, but Jordan wrote a great article. I don't read much on Swerve Autos. and I think we'll share that to Inside EVs as well. Yeah, so he drove it. I won't spoil it because I didn't get to drive it, but he, you know, is obviously going to agree with you on what you say, I'm sure.
Yeah, so, you know, as we've said before, you know, Kyle and I both love Taycans. I mean, most people that drive them do. So just getting another flavor is fantastic as far as I'm concerned. Keep them coming. Although I think this is it now, because I think they filled their whole product cycle. The GTS kind of fits in between the 4S and the Turbo as far as Porsche's nomenclature goes. And the GTS is really supposed to be like the enthusiast's version of the vehicle. Now that's, we have a picture up of the sedan GTS Taycan. And now we did, as you see, I'm standing in front of the they call it the Sport Turismo. It's the GTS version of the Porsche Cross Turismo. It doesn't have any of the off-roading features, you know, the gravel mode and lift mode, and it doesn't, you know, have all the exterior off-road package plastics that you can get. This is, you know, the wagon version that you want to take on a track. We didn't get to take it on the track like we did the sedan version, but we did get you know, a couple of hours of driving in some winding mountainous roads that Kyle's very familiar with out in California. And I could tell you, it was, you know, just dialed in. You know, that this, they accomplished what they wanted to, the chassis tuning, the damping. It has the adaptive air suspension with Smart Lift and Porsche active suspension management, the torque vector, Porsche torque vectoring plus. Everything worked. The thing just, you know, handled way better than a wagon should ever be able to handle. You know, it was really a fantastic driving experience, as you would expect. And I just love that Porsche. I've mentioned this before. I love that they are giving us the Taycan in all the different flavors. You know, some manufacturers have kind of treated electric vehicles with kid gloves and, you know, giving you one, but not giving it the whole treatment of what they typically do for the rest of their brand, thinking like, oh, well, we made one and that's enough. But Porsche didn't. They're giving us every flavor. And Martin, if you could jump back to that last screen. Sorry, I forgot to mention, one of the really cool things that they have now is this new sunscreen system on their on the roof, on the panoramic glass roof. It has 9 separate segments, and it can go from clear glass to a matte finish. And it's really cool. It completely blocks out the sun. Like when you turn it on, all of a sudden you're looking at the glass. You might be looking at the sky or buildings above you, and all of a sudden you can't see anything. It just completely filters it out. It's really good. It's the first of its kind. And you don't have to have the whole thing on and off. You can turn them on and off per segment. Each 9 segments you can turn on. So you can let a little light in or as much as you'd like. The video that I have posted shows it being used, so you can see exactly how well it works. It's really a unique system.
You weren't here last week, but we have week's show, we also had a little video demonstrating. We met with at Kyle's event, the EV Media Summit. Calvin Kim was there from Porsche, that's their Taycan specialist. Mm-hmm. And he gave us like so many people like demos of this, of the roof and stuff. It was great. So yeah, it's a pretty cool feature.
Yeah, really cool feature. And the GTS and GTS Cross Turismo has 590 horsepower with overboost, 626 pound-feet of torque. So this thing hauls 0 to 60 in about 3.5 seconds. And just I got a little short interview with Calvin and on my video, and just an absolute monster as far as driving and handling. Fantastic vehicle. And like I said, you know, you've got the Cross Turismo if you want to do some light off-roading. You got the Sport Turismo if that's not your thing, but you want to take it out on the track on the weekends. And it's just great that Porsche has given us all these different versions of the vehicle.
That looks so good. I love that car. I really do. I need to get rich somehow. Anyway. All right. So, Martin, you weren't driving anything. You tried to drive one of these cars that are in your neighborhood, but I guess they wouldn't let you. What's the story with that? I guess you have a racing series, an off-road racing series, right up on your doorstep, basically, this weekend.
Yeah. So I guess everyone's heard of Formula E and that series. And the team behind it, and Alejandro Agag, who started Formula E. And Extreme E is in its first year this year, and it's the 5th round this weekend, meant to be in Argentina. I'll play some B-roll that I took just while you hear me talk about it. But it may have been Argentina, but, you know, travel restrictions, so it's in Dorset, and that's exactly where I live. This is about 20 minutes away from my house. This is actually, the location is a tank testing ground for the British Army. So it is going to be an insane. There's some jumps. They've done some groundworks to it as well to make it, I think, really spectacular. Now, this year, Extreme E has raced in places from Greenland to Saudi Arabia. And so they've gone to extreme locations. Now, I'm not saying the British countryside is extreme, but as you can see, we've had some rain. It's really churned up. The tanks have been over it. And the army boys are watching all of a sudden these race cars turn up. Teams owned by the likes of Lewis Hamilton with his X44 team, and Nico Rosberg, Jenson Button as well, team owners. Plus, there's the Chip Ganassi Racing team. There's some other some famous names involved in this as well. Now, these cars are made by Spark Racing Technology, a French. I think they're based in France, and they make the Formula E cars. The batteries are provided by Williams Advanced Engineering. And so these cars are in their first year of racing. As you can see, they are pretty extreme vehicles because they've got to cope with sand and snow and dirt and rocks, and when they come to Great Britain, mud, lots and lots and lots of mud. Four-wheel drive, 250 kilowatt motors on each axle, single-speed gearbox, 54 kilowatt hour pack, which I think is growth. I think about 50 usable. And I got a chance to talk to, let me skip forward to some more of the kind of on-track action, or at least just some of the shots of the vehicles. I got a chance to sit down for a long time with the chief engineer from Williams, who provided the battery pack for these. And inside here, so the battery pack sits in the middle of the vehicle. It's pretty much a cube. It's not like a skateboard design or anything. It's a cube that sits in the middle of the vehicle, completely sealed. And so they use 2170s. And he took a module out for me. They've got obviously all the spares and what have you. And yeah, like if you're driving around, I don't know, a Model 3 or a Model Y with a, he called them 21700s, but those cylindrical cells, which you'd find in road cars, exactly what Williams have put inside here. No thermal management when they're racing, by the way. So before they go out and qualify or race, they have got giant hot air and cold air blowers. So they'll blow hot air across the cells or across the battery pack to warm it up and get it race ready. And they will then, when they come out, because the races are 15 minutes, they'll then come back and blow air-conditioned 8 degrees Celsius air over the cells to cool them down. So no active thermal management whilst they're out and about racing. This season, we've seen a couple of rollovers, a couple of really extreme accidents, and the battery packs haven't missed a beat. Now, they do. The teams don't do the battery engineering themselves. They just operate the cars. And so a couple of times this year, yeah, they have needed to supply a spare battery, or they take out the battery from these cars that have done 4,500 kilometers so far, and they're going to use them for all of next year, exactly the same battery packs for season two. They're going to be tweaked, but otherwise the same cells, and they'll take out a module, do testing, and then you know, give the team back their original battery. So really fascinating stuff to go and see electric off-road car racing. It's on broadcast TV in about 80 different countries this weekend, qualifying Saturday, race on Sunday, and but they stream it for free online, I think YouTube or all the other platforms as well. So it's got off to a good start, I think, got a bit of a following through various reasons. Like, you know, it's electric and people are interested, famous names behind it. There's two drivers for every car, and you have to pit the car halfway through and change drivers. It's a 50-50 male female split. So again, that has attracted attention because it's cool. It's bringing more women into motorsport. And as many of the, you know, the female drivers that I talk to say, yeah, the top racing drivers are men, because when they were coming up and showed potential, they were then given the plum seats, and then they developed and they had the training and they move on. So you look at either the Indy Grid or Formula One or whatever, or NASCAR, it's male dominated, because not because they're the better drivers, because they've had the opportunities. And so this is a series that again opens up the opportunity of racing in motorsport to more women as well. And there's some of the British Army boys walking past. they were taking no prisoners with the mud. They're used to testing their tanks on this stuff. Everyone else, the soft boys like me, that had my welly boots on and was tiptoeing through the mud, they thought were hilarious. But that's on this weekend. Really interesting kind of space frame design under here. They used cameras, obviously, you know, wing mirrors, but they do have cameras facing forwards and backwards because it's pretty close, intense racing. Right. Three cars go out at once, and everything on this car is bespoke. So the whole chassis is bespoke. Those Continental tires you're looking at were designed for electric off-road racing. So everything on these vehicles was designed for these cars. Apart from, I suspect, the CCS plug, which is out the back of the car, and it's just like, that's from a parts catalog or something, because I'm like, that's how you charge it. Now, they charge it. They will charge at 40 kilowatts, but they tend to charge them at about 20 kilowatts most of the time when they're in the pits, and they will, and they keep the batteries. It's an 800-volt system, and they keep the batteries at a full state of charge all the time. So 800-volt system, always topped up to maximum power, and again, so that is so that they have access to all of that power immediately. They'll run the battery packs down to about 5 or 8% state of charge when they are going through a full race on Sunday for the for the main event. Inside, just fantastic, nice big screen, and on that screen all the stuff that, you know, the people watching this show would nerd out on. So you've got all the access to all those different metrics of what's happening in the battery, and you're me trying to move a flag. It's just really interesting to go and see how these are racing electric vehicles. We're going to see more electric motorsport in the future, aren't we? And it'll be interesting to see which ones take off or not. As much as I love Formula E, I can't confess that I watch it week in, week out. It's impressive what they do. And again, electric touring cars, pure ETCR launched this year. I can't confess I've seen all of those races. And so it'll be interesting to see, as different series go electric, which ones people take to and which ones they don't. This, because it's 15-minute short bursts of racing, I think work really well with electric. Next year, World Rallycross goes all electric. And again, like that, they are short, sharp battles, and it suits electric power, instant torque, mad, insane racing, and then back to the pits and plug in. So that's what I was doing yesterday and thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm still very muddy.
All right. Well, thanks for that, Martin. That's great. Yeah, I love the extremely, like, the, it's just some crazy action, you know, like you said, like short bursts of like, and high flying, man. They get lots of air. Like you showed some clips over the weekend on your Twitter account, EV News Daily. Catching all kinds of air over there.
But yeah, charged on, they have a traveling, because they travel around the world, traveling with them is all of the hydrogen charging technology. So I'm not sure if I can, there's some shots of the inside of the car, but yeah, I didn't get too much of the charging stuff, but all of those pits all run off one, it'll be an electrolyzer, I guess, out the back. Didn't get a huge amount of time with that, but yeah, that's how they're not running off diesel generators before people start saying, oh, but how are they powered?
Right. Right on. So Kyle, so a little while ago, you had a chance to drive the Ioniq 5, Hyundai Ioniq 5, but driving impressions were embargoed for some time. Motor One has a first drive up on their site this morning, so I assume it's safe to talk about now, right?
Yep, we can totally talk about Ioniq 5.
All right. This is like the most exciting car ever, right?
I think actually you're not far off there. Extremely exciting. Just from a styling perspective, right? We've been talking about Ioniq 5 and any of the EGMP cars, the global modular platform from Hyundai Group, for over a year now on this show. I mean, this has been the hottest topic of a ground up 800 volt system architecture vehicle that's not really using off the shelf components. Everything's designed and engineered in-house, sort of making, like, they spent the big bucks, right? Because they designed everything from the ground up. And then, they had to make the car good. And some, you know, I know some of the Hyundai chassis guys that work at their proving grounds, and some of the tire manufacturers that provide tires for this vehicle. And they are, my understanding is Hyundai Group is one of the most particular customers in terms of dialing in their vehicles to the nth degree. They just go insane. And I have to say, everything translates to real world to being insane. There's a full video on Out of Spec Reviews as of this morning about this car. It's almost an hour long, so strap in.
Is that up now?
Yep, up now. Awesome. It went up just basically at the same time we hit record on this show.
Okay.
That's up there now, and just rocking. This thing, can I mean, at the end of the day, I could go on and go through all the little details here. It took me an hour to get through it on Out of Spec Reviews, and I didn't even touch half the things I wanted to talk about. There's nothing wrong with this car.
Wow.
That I can think of. Like, nothing.
Brakes feel good?
Amazing. Brakes are awesome. Okay. Really good. Yep. Brakes are really good.
Blended friction and...
Yeah, it's a brake-by-wire system, but it's tuned wonderfully. And there is only one kind of issue with the brakes. It's not an issue. It's just if you pop off the accelerator and then hit the brakes really quickly, even if you tap them, all Hyundais do this. It goes into like its emergency stopping thing. It thinks like, oh, you must not be hitting the pedal hard enough, and I'm going to go full ABS. Okay. But that won't really happen in real life or even in a dynamic driving situation. I was just testing some of the regen stuff. And so, yeah, I mean, there's intricacies to the car and oddities, but at the end of the day, it's as a package, I don't think any car can compete with this, you know, sort of even regardless of price point, if you will. Okay. It's just got so much room. You sit, you know, in a great spot if you're looking for a high riding position. For me, I wish the seat went a little bit lower, but again, nitpicking, most people like a high driving position. It has the longest wheelbase of any Hyundai Kia product, longer than the Hyundai Palisade, which is their big seven-seat SUV. And so it rides really well. It's very soft. But then when you drive it fast, yes, it's soft, but it actually supports the weight really well. The chassis is amazing, and it uses so much rear tire. Like, this thing is totally balanced when you rip it. And if you nail it coming out of corners, you can get a little bit of oversteer if you want. I mean, it's not understeery at all. Okay. And it's just, like, great. Everything about it is great. It is the new standard. This is just, if any car, electric car comes out and it cannot match what this car can do, this is just the car, I think.
Wow, that's pretty high praise there, Kyle. I don't know. So Tesla better watch out. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. I don't know how. I mean, look, you get out of a Model Y and get into this thing. This thing's way cheaper, by the way.
Right. I was going to say, I don't know if we were going to put the pricing further down the running order.
Yeah,
Dominic,
I got the price coming up.
Do you want to like segue into that? Because I think that also plays into what Kyle is saying. This is not only an incredible vehicle, but this week we heard how much it costs.
Yeah, we'll talk about prices right after this. Yeah.
Because when I shot this review, I had no idea how much the car cost. They wouldn't tell us.
Right.
And so I thought it was going to be 60 grand. I was like, this thing's going to be so expensive. And even then in my head, I was like, this is going to be a lot of money. I was like, this is the new benchmark. And then the pricing came out and I just lost my mind. I was like, how could you not? Look, it's not, I guess, should I say, it's not entirely perfect. There are things that need to be changed or updated through software. For example, it doesn't really do any good station routing, you know, for EV charging stuff.
Okay.
It doesn't precondition the battery pack on the way to the chargers, but all of this will come. Plug-in charge will come. All of this will come with software. So by the time a normal person could actually go and buy one, because I think they're going to be so supply limited.
Yeah.
I think all those issues should be sorted. I hope. If not, then, you know, I'll report that when I do a full review. We'll have to say as is, not in the future. It's got a little tiny front trunk, which I didn't show in the video because it's not really worth showing. I showed it in the EV6.
It's enough for a charging cable or a smelly takeaway or actually valuables because people wouldn't assume to look under the hood.
Yeah, I agree. Laptops, whatever you're going to leave in there. For me, I would leave my laptop in there. I mean, it's really hard for me to say objectively this car isn't probably the most well thought out package I've ever driven.
Now, wow. I did get a tweet this morning, only a couple of hours ago, from one of my listeners, and if I can bring it up immediately, I will. And it says, good news, the Arniq 5 cold gate, which for any new viewers, that is just where cars charge slower when they're colder than they would otherwise. Hyundai saying the car will heat itself up to optimize the battery before a fast charge. Function is connected to the car's nav, implemented first half of 2022. Okay. I don't know if you guys, I think there's something called like the Eco Pack or the Heat Pack, which we can spec. And I gather it might be dependent on having that as an option. But I need clarification on that. But certainly, as exactly like Kyle just said, they've sorted it or will sort it.
So that heat pack you call it. So basically, the way in the US it works, if you spec a rear wheel drive car, you do not get the heat pump. If you spec an all-wheel drive car, heat pump standard. However,
that is weird.
They said in their presentations there was like no battery pack heater in the standard car. I'm like, I don't think that's possible. You need a heater. I don't know how you wouldn't warm that thing up. So my guess is resistive heater base car, and then a heat pump for the all-wheel drive car. But yeah, station preconditioning will come. Look, at the end of the day, you know, that's thermal management issue is going to be something we need to dive into too. I've watched Bjorn's, you know, sort of road trip testing where it overheats after multiple charging sessions. It happened to me. You know, most journalists were pulling into the planned charging stop with 30, 40, 50% state of charge. I pulled in with one, and everyone's like, how'd you pull in with one? I'm like, well, I kind of do this every day. That's like, you know, normal. But of course I drained the car down very quickly, which means heated everything up.
Yeah.
So for me to do a full 0 to 100% DC fast charging test, which I did do, then, you know, it just overheated. I didn't get a great curve. And even Hyundai was saying, no matter when you plug in, you pretty much can't get a full ideal maxed out curve unless it's kind of cold outside and like really close conditions, because it accepts so much power, 235 stated kilowatt peak. I've been seeing 240, or even maybe slightly higher. You know, that basically it doesn't have the thermal capacity to take that much power the entire time. So they just run the thing max until you hit a temperature limit, and then they dynamically ramp down there. It's exactly how you should do charging. As we've been saying, when we talk about Mustang Mach-E charge curves, this is the type of charge curve we want. Give us everything you can take until you get hot and then ramp down. So it's going to require multiple charging sessions to theoretically map the peak of the curve. So this is just going to take a lot of time. But overall, insane charging monster. Efficiency is going to be one to dive into, because I hear the Kona Electric is more efficient. That's a combustion adapted chassis than the Ioniq 5.
Yes, and it is.
So, it's lighter though.
Yeah, this is a much larger car.
Yeah.
But efficiency may be something not great, but I think like no matter what it is, it's offset by that insane charging. So yeah, can't wait to spend more time with it.
And so, as far as the size, the long wheelbase plays tricks visually when you look at it. It makes it look like it's a small hatchback, almost like a Golf, but it's not. And Kyle talked about the wheelbase being the longest wheelbase on any Hyundai. To put it in perspective, a Tesla Model Y is about 4.5 to 5 inches longer than the Ioniq 5, but its wheelbase is 4.5 to 5 inches shorter than the Ioniq 5. So you've got a car that's longer with a shorter wheelbase. So, you know, they really stretched out that wheelbase. Another point I want to make out, Kyle, I'm assuming you drove the all-wheel drive version, and the all-wheel drive version has a tiny little frunk, as you noticed. I mean, it's tiny. It might be smaller than my BMW i3 frunks was. Whoa. It's really small. But that's only on the all-wheel drive version. If you get the rear-wheel drive version, it doesn't need that motor up front. Now it's got a big frunk, or bigger at least. So just you should know that it has two different size frunks depending on if you have all-wheel drive or rear-wheel drive. I haven't driven the Ioniq 5, but I had the chance to play with one for like an hour and a half by myself in New York City. We put that video up on Inside EVs months ago, and without even driving it, I fell in love with it, you know, and I really thought it was fantastically engineered and put together. It has everything that you want. I echo Kyle's sentiment, you know, and now that I see the price, where we're at price point, I think it's a fantastic. I mean, you know, other than, and we always go back to this, other than the fact that Teslas have the supercharging network, which is an enormous, enormous advantage on road trips and so forth. Other than that, you know, and the fact that maybe it's not quite as fast or as powerful as a Model Y, I don't know why you would get a Model Y over this. Cost more, it goes a little bit further. The performance is there, but as a whole car, as a package, the Ioniq 5 is a fantastic deal. And the price point now that we see that is really makes it that much better.
Yeah, I'm so pleased with this car. It's just, a lot of people are asking, do you think it's an SUV or do you think it's a hatchback? And I think, you know, it's really, you know, right up there with ID4 Mach-E. I don't really view it any differently. What I would do though, and I hope someone makes this, and this might be a little controversial, I don't know, but I would lower it. So I would want to have it kind of sit on the ground, get some really nice wheels for it, and give it a very hatchback-like look. I think we're going to see these things modified and stanced and sort of visually adapted. The look for me is slam it on the ground, good wheels, roof box on top, and then dogs out the windows would be like the ultimate Colorado all-wheel drive big hatchback. Surprisingly, everyone here at the office, you know, all of my colleagues loved it. So we might be searching to get one and making some content. I don't know. It might be hard to get one. They sell them in ZEV states plus 8 others. I have a list, but I lost it.
But that changes next year, though. It goes all 50 states sometime next year, though, right?
Yeah, but that's really – they wouldn't give an exact date, and they were like, it's kind of supply dependent. Right. And I don't know if that – I don't think they're going to be selling them in Alaska next year. I'd be surprised. But right. Maybe the continental U.S. Either way, even with ZEV states, you can pretty much go and buy one and bring it home.
Yes.
And you should be fine. I mean, I know tons of people who have done that. Some people are concerned about servicing in those situations, right. But sometimes you just got to deal with a little bit of adventure when you buy the car you want to buy. I don't know.
Right.
You know, it's just part of the deal.
Someone is asking, and Jacob Marley asks, any comment on the ride height? Do you feel if you're riding the equivalent to a Q4 or like the Audi Q4 e-tron?
Like I said, I think it's similar to Mach-E, ID4, Q4 e-tron. It doesn't feel that much different. Perhaps the car visually looks lower, but your seating position inside the car is quite high, and the rest of the cabin's quite low. So it gives you this very Tesla-like view out the front. For me personally, like I mentioned, I kind of like to sit in cars. So right. I think I would also try and find a way to see if you could get the seat to go a little bit lower, maybe right. take out some booster rails or whatever they have up there. Like Model Y has these spacer rails that I think you can remove and mount the seat lower, although they might be fixed. And I would definitely try to go for something like that. I would try and un-SUV-ify the Ioniq 5 if I got one.
Hatchbackify it.
Hatchback of five. Yeah. It's so cool looking, though. Everyone thumbs up in traffic. By the way, I took this thing down to the Mexican border, which was, just a cool experience in and of itself. I just sat there and there was like commotion going around and people walking around. And, like, everyone was just thumbs up, coming up to the windows, people not speaking English, like trying to ask what this thing is. And I'm like, it's a Hyundai. And they're like, no way.
Wow.
It was really cool.
That's going to make some waves, man. I'm really excited. I can't wait to see this car like in traffic. You know, it's like, I saw a Mach-E the other day I'm in Tallahassee, Florida. So there's not a huge variety of EVs like wandering in our streets. So when you see one, like, especially something like special like that, it's like a big deal. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that. Hey, did you try the seats out? The Ioniq 5 has the seats that go all the way back, theater mode, and like the little leg rest thing comes up and everything. How is that?
I like to sit pretty upright and close even while I'm kind of stopped. So for me, I was like not super into it, but the thing is it has this lower leg adjustment on the bottom that you can control independently of putting the car in nap mode or theater mode or whatever they call it.
Okay.
And it actually goes pretty high, almost to the point where you can't touch your feet to the pedals. So you gotta be a little careful of it pushing your legs up. But I think that's only in the limited trim. There is an issue with the packaging on this car, which is you can't get the sunroof on lower trim levels. I mistakenly said in the video you can get it mid-spec and up. In the US, you have to get the max trim to get the glass roof. And to me, that glass roof almost makes the entire cabin. So you're into this thing, you know, starting price is great. By the way, smaller battery pack. We didn't discuss that for the starting
one. Right. Yeah.
And so, you know, really low power level. It's almost like they don't want you to buy that one, but I think it's going to be good for ride sharing, for rental situations, for inner city mobility. I'm really looking forward to testing that base car. That's going to be important. But the one I would want, I wouldn't want anything less than a limited, not because of any other feature other than the glass roof.
Cool.
Right. So let's talk about prices for a second, and maybe we can break up some other issues too as we go along. So so there will be three different trim levels. There's the SE, SEL, and Limited. The smaller 58 kilowatt hour battery is available on the lowest trim level in rear wheel drive only, and the rest will have the 77.4 kilowatt hour battery and available in either rear wheel drive or all wheel drive. The most affordable version, that's the small battery, rear-wheel drive. It's called the Ioniq 5 SE Standard Range. It gets 220 miles of EPA range. The rear motor is 125 kilowatts or 168 horsepower. So it's not going to be crazy, crazy quick, and rides on 19-inch wheels. So the MSRP is $39,700, and there's a $1,225 destination charge on top of that, of course. But if you can take advantage of the full $7,500 tax credit, which is what we have right now, and who knows if that'll change, you know, there's legislation they're trying to get through that could alter that. But right now, if you can take advantage of the entire $7,500 tax credit, that could turn it effectively into a $33,425 car, which is not bad, you know, considering.
And if you live in New Jersey, take another $5,000 off the top of it.
Right.
That qualifies for $5,000 cash on the hood rebate. So
$28,000
is pretty damn good. That is for this car.
That's the one thing about having like that low spec. You know, we might not have all the power or all the range, but you know, it's such a great looking car, and the rest of the package is so good. A lot of people are going to want to get into that. Maybe you know they don't have the budget to get the top of the $50,000 whatever. So let's get into those other prices.
And Dom, and as Kyle mentioned, ride sharing. You know, imagine getting that base version for $28,000 and you do ride sharing. I mean, it's awesome.
Right. Yeah, also, you get 2 years of free 30-minute Electrify America DC fast charging. It might be 3 years. I think it's two.
It's 2 years, but two you years. Can't use that if you're using it for business. If you're ride sharing,
you can't do it if you're towing Ubering or Lyfting, I should say. But as an owner, as a consumer, that actually, you know, on something that charges this fast, it actually, once they add the battery preconditioning function, this might be a great option for people who don't have home charging and need to DC fast charge.
Right.
Because we spend too much time assuming everyone has home charging and not enough time. I'm not just saying you, I'm just saying in general assuming, you know, people in apartments want, electric cars too, or that don't have access to home charging, and therefore cold battery pack DC fast charging makes a big difference. And if they can warm this thing up and get that good charging curve, this is like almost the only affordable ish EV that someone could go for that could like easily live with it.
And we didn't say that number today, but so I believe it's like 10 to 80% is 18 minutes to charge.
Correct. Yeah. Under ideal conditions, we can beat it by having more ideal conditions.
Yeah.
Right.
Because 0 to 50% is 10 minutes.
Right, which is crazy. That's great.
Yeah, that's Taycan level. That was tested on EV6, but you know, should be about the same thing here.
Right.
And also they are making the battery pack. You get the big battery pack. We got a slightly smaller one for launch. They're fixing that next year. So the Arniq 5 and the EV6 pack will be the same size. It was missing two modules. I don't know why. The launch cars.
They just forgot it.
I forgot to put them in.
Battery's constrained.
They're putting them in now. So the battery packs will be the same size with an EV6 and Arniq 5. The one I had was the rear wheel drive. So I think it's the ultimate spec. I think that's what they call it over here. But rear wheel drive version. And honestly, like, you know, because my wife doesn't care about 0-60, and my wife cares a little bit about range, but we don't really go on road trips anyway. She couldn't care less. Like, if I said to her, what's the maximum power output of a car? She'd just look at me and shut up. Stop talking electric cars at me. So that these, you know, I look at her as a sample size of one, I must admit, but I use her to remind myself that actually a lot of people are driving around town doing errands, don't care about 0-60 times or even, you know, 50-70 mph overtake. They just look at that car and go, it's in some states, 28 grand, some 33. Like 33 grand, they'll probably be paying monthly for that car as well. So just tell me the monthly number, and it's going to be so competitive when they go and cross-shop that with an ID4, for instance. And it then becomes a subjective thing of what do you think it looks like? And I thought this car was going to be far too big for my wife, and she's like, no, it looks great. To your point, Tom, she saw the pictures and was like, it looks fine. And then in real life, she was like, holy bazookas, that's huge, because of that 3 meter wheelbase, a much bigger. Right. But even then, she stood back and looked at it in the dealer's lot and was like, yeah, that looks okay to me. That's not too big. And I'm like, Oh man, your mind is playing tricks on you because you don't, you know, you can't picture driving down our driveway with that. But still, so many people are going to look at that car and go, that's such good value.
Yeah, I agree. So, listen, Martin, could you pull up a comment from Christian Richard? So there's been a discussion in the comment section about dealer markups. And, a couple people are back and forth on that. The last one, just a couple comments up from Christian.
About Rivers. Ordering online?
No, yeah, at Louis, not even that one. At Louis online orders is essentially the way to go. There was a discussion that there's going to be markups, and there's going to be markups on this. Let's face it. It's going to be in demand in the beginning. It's free market. The dealers can do what they go. But one of the questions here that Christian said that they're doing this online ordering and there isn't going to be markups that some people are saying. That's not correct. When you place a reservation online, you cannot order a car online directly from the manufacturer. It's illegal in the United States. Ford, for instance, with the F-150 Lightning, they have these reservations, which I have one of them. And, they can give you a guideline of what the MSRP is going to be, but then it's up to the dealer can do whatever they want. Ford's struggling with this right now. Yeah. I reached out to a couple of the local F-150 dealers, Ford dealers in my area, because I have a reservation. I'm going to be one of the earliest people to get the vehicle. I reserved it literally like the minute the reservation book opened. They're all saying 10 to 15,000 over MSRP. Which is going to be a tough pill to swallow. So I talked to Darren Palmer about this when we did the, Kyle might even have been with me. I'm not sure. We were at the Mustang Mach EGT drive and we sat down, we talked for about a half an hour and Darren Palmer is the electrification manager globally of Ford. And he basically said, look, our hands are kind of tied with this. The dealers can do what they want. We do not have power over them to control pricing. We can incentivize them not to do this, like maybe play with their allotments and say, listen, if we hear that you're really gouging people, maybe you're not going to get so many of these vehicles, so forth and so on. But there's a limited amount of influence they can have. So just be clear about this. There is no online ordering in the US. You can't buy a car from the manufacturer. You can reserve one. That gets put to the dealership's order books and they will set the price. The manufacturer has no influence over what the dealership charges you. There's very strict laws that regulate that in the US. So my opinion is we're going to see, at least in the beginning, we're going to see gouging on the Ioniq 5 because it's a great EV. It's going to be in high demand. We know Hyundai has already said they're not going to be making a whole lot of them in the beginning. So expect to pay more. Now, some people are saying confirm pricing first. Look, the dealers, some of the dealers can tell you they're going to charge a certain amount. And then when they realize months later that they're only getting 20 or 30 of these, they'll change it. And you'll say, well, what are you going to do? You're going to sue them. You're going to get a lawyer and try to sue them to sell you a vehicle at a certain price.
They'd be happy if you canceled your order, then they'll sell it to somebody else.
Right? They'll say, look, we didn't realize this, but there's a market adjustment now. We saw that on the Mustang Mach-E, especially these days. With the supply chain problems, the manufacturers aren't sending the dealers as many vehicles as they would like. So they're even more incentivized to do market adjustments. So I bet that if you can nab one of these at MSRP, you're doing really well.
Right. Hey, so I just want to go over a couple more prices. So if you want the most affordable Long Ranger, that's 303 EPA miles. That would be the Ioniq 5 SE. It's a 77.4 kilowatt hour battery, rear wheel drive, 225 horsepower. It makes more horsepower because the battery is bigger. You can get more out of it, more power out of it. So it starts at $43,650 plus the $1,225 destination charge. Take off the $7,500 tax credit if you can take advantage of that whole thing. A lot of people can't, but if you can, it could be as cheap as $44,325 if you don't have to pay a market adjustment, as Tom was talking about just before this. That's $37,375. I've got ahead of myself there. So $37,375, 303 mile Ioniq 5, rear wheel drive. If you wanted to go if you want the highest trim with the longest range, that's the Ioniq 5 Limited rear-wheel drive with the 19-inch wheels. 20-inch wheels are optional, but they'll decrease your range slightly. And that's MSRP, $50,600 plus destination charge. And I believe that gets you the glass roof, or at least the option for the glass roof, plus the $1,225 destination charge. Subtract the $7,500 tax credit that we have in place now, and that would be $44,325, which, so top spec in rear-wheel drive is $44,325. And if you want to go all out with the all-wheel drive car, $54,500 starts off, and but the destination charge, take off the tax credit, $48,225. And I think if you're buying a $54,000 car, you're probably going to get pretty close to that whole tax credit back, you know, on your taxes. So that would make it under $50,000.
Should people wait for the rules to change, or should you buy an EV now? A general question, not about the Hyundai. Like, how close are we to these new rules coming in?
That's hard to say, man. It's
no end in sight right now. You know, right. There's two senators that are holding it up, Martin, and they don't seem to be budging. And I haven't been following the news really close, but Dominic, you probably know. I think they're going to the holiday session now. So they were hoping to get this done before the holidays, but now it's over. So now they're going to pick it back up in January. And the two senators basically, it sounds like they're just not willing to give it all, so it might just stand as it is.
That would be such a shame, because the proposal as it is at the moment is for the tax credit to be refundable. So even if $7,500 a year isn't, and then there's the union contentious stuff, I understand that,
but
if your tax liability isn't the full amount, then you're getting a check back in the post for the difference, and that makes all the difference with buying a car like this in the low 30s or you know. So I was keen to know about whether they're going to pass that or not. I saw so much pushback against the union stuff. I specifically saw Elon Musk saying there should be no subsidies at all for anything. I mean, it's easy for a billionaire who's got a year-long order book to say that, but you know, maybe he's losing a little touch with reality there. People do need their help to get into EVs, but even so, it looks like the whole union side of it, which was, I understand why that's controversial, they're almost, I don't know, because I'm not obviously where you are, but from a different country, it appears throwing the baby out with the bathwater. So like, well, if you're not going to have the $4,500 union money, you can't have any subsidy at all. And that just seems like it's going to hit working middle class people really hard. But that's my impression from a long way away.
I'm not in love with a lot of the changes that they're making. I know we needed to rework this, the whole tax credit, but in the form that they're proposing, I'm not a huge supporter of it. The only thing that I like, two things I like about it, is that it is the everybody would qualify for it. And number one, and number two, it would reinstate Tesla and GM's tax credit. If there's going to be tax credits, if we're going to have them, then Tesla and GM should also qualify for them. They shouldn't be at a competitive disadvantage. If you want to get rid of them entirely, that's one thing. But if they're going to be there, we shouldn't penalize the early adopters, the early movers, GM and Tesla, who went out there and sold more EVs than the other companies that were kind of laggards.
Right.
And now that more and more people want EVs, the early movers are penalized. So, you know, I'm not happy with how this thing, the whole progression of this thing's just been it's a disaster, in my opinion. Anyway, let's not harp on tax credits.
Yes,
Kyle, quick question. The vehicle to load feature on the Ioniq 5, is that only available in the Limited?
No, I think it's available in all of them, but the adapter is not included in any of them. So you have to buy the adapter as a secondary feature or an OE accessory from your Hyundai dealer for who knows how much money. I guess $500. We'll see.
But that's that's a 110 outlet from the charging cord?
Yeah, it's 1.9 kilowatt continuous.
Okay.
But there's also an outlet in the back seat.
Right. Outlets in the back seat too, though, aren't
Yeah,
there?
I don't know. I don't know if that outlet in the back seat stays on with the car off.
Okay.
Or if the port off of the J plug is the only one.
I can answer that question. It doesn't. Okay. Only the port with the J plug is on when the vehicle is off. That's what I was told when I saw the vehicle at in New York.
Well, then all you have to do is just put it neutral, parking brake, lock the seatbelt in, and then the port stays on.
Right. Yes.
Hey, so if you're watching this on YouTube or a Twitch, you can see this on the screen now. So we show that when they say the J plug, so that's the regular J1772 plug that you plug in your home charger in. So the back of that has a place where you can plug in a regular socket, like a cord, right into that, and so you can charge anything pretty much off of that if you needed to.
It's so perfect for me because you know how I have my Sprinter and we take it on trips all the time. In hot weather, my batteries in the Sprinter don't last long enough for me to run the air conditioning all night. And I have no, just generator. I can start up the combustion engine, but I don't like to do that. This would be perfect. Like if we're road tripping the Ioniq 5 in the Sprinter, pull this thing up to it, plug the Sprinter in, a wall outlet, it maxes it out, but it's just enough to run the air conditioner in the Sprinter. And we could have full batteries and AC all night just running off the Ioniq 5.
Right. Hey, and you can charge other cars with this too, right? So
really
slowly.
Not slowly. Not even worth it. It would provide zero useful value for that.
Is it?
But you can.
The wall outlet.
It is. So I've got I know someone who's had two power cuts since they got their Ioniq 5 this year. And because they've been on sale over here for a while, and it saved him twice from losing a whole freezer of food. And I can't think the last time I had a power cut. I don't live in the sticks, but I'm not in the middle of a city. But I guess it is a thing. People do lose their power, and and it saved him twice from it. And I guess you could, if you are thinking about what could I charge from here. Yes, you could come home, and if you have a home battery storage, plug your car in and recharge your home battery, but I wouldn't even bother doing it. It's going to be so slow.
When I did the Lucid Air charging video, Peter Rawlinson took some time to show me some technology that they haven't released yet. And what he showed me was the vehicle to vehicle charging cable that Lucid's going to be coming out with soon, I think within a matter of a couple of months. And it'll charge another vehicle up to 19.2 kilowatts from the air, which is
that's
240 volt. Right?
Yeah, which is completely awesome. Hopefully, as soon as that is ready, we'll be able to do some recordings with. And speaking of Lucid, really quick, I want to mention, because I mentioned a couple of weeks ago I was going to be doing the 70 mile an hour Lucid Air range test that was supposed to happen 2 days ago. Yes. A combination of me being sick and it raining in Northern California for 2 days where I was going to go, I canceled the trip. So now, and that was on me. Now we're trying to reschedule. Looks now we were up against the holidays and then CES. So it looks like the earliest it's going to be is sometime in early January. But just to keep everybody, we're still doing that. It's just I had to cancel it because I wasn't feeling well. And we need good weather. I'm actually thinking about telling Lucid I don't want to do it in Northern California by their headquarters. I want to do it in Arizona by their factory because I think we'll get better weather and we'll get less traffic. So right. I think I'm going to schedule it for sometime second week in January in Arizona and do it then. So we'll keep you abreast on that. I know a lot of people have been asking about the 70 mile an hour range test with the air, and that's why we haven't done it yet. We would have been able to talk about it today if things went as planned.
I might be in Arizona around that period of time driving something kind of special. Maybe we'll run into you. That'd be great.
Listen, let's coordinate it. I'm working with them now for second week. I can't first week CES and everything. I don't want to do it during that. But we're looking at second week-ish, Dom. So definitely, come along.
I'll look at those email dates again. All right. So,
By the way, can I? It's not on the running order, but I will mention it because we're talking about vehicle to load. Okay. I'll mention vehicle to grid very quickly. And it was a press release from Volkswagen this week, and they said that next year they are going to turn on vehicle to grid for every ID car with the big battery. So, no more details from that. Just a press release from VW.
Right.
I did highlight some of it. Which said the bidirectionality of the ID models. So I don't know whether that includes like Skoda Enyaqs, but the ID models with a 77 kilowatt hour pack will get an over the air update next year to turn on DC bidirectional charging. And I'm guessing that means you have to have the VW designed wall box, but that looks quite cool. So just a mention for it, no more details.
Hmm, interesting. Oh.
But that's proper. I think that's V2G. That's proper vehicle to grid, because then you've got to get a different wall box, which will have some protection. You know, if you get a power outage in your neighborhood, you don't want to be feeding electricity back to the grid because you're going to zap the repair workers. And so that looks like it'll be a proper V2G system, like a Tesla Powerwall, that has all of that safety stuff in place. So, yeah, we wait and see. Nothing more than an announcement at this stage. But very cool if you have an ID car.
Can I derail one more time as well?
Yeah,
sure. Because you know how the Ioniq 5's 800 volt system, and you know some older hardware cannot go up to 800 volts yet. They're 400 volt or 600 volt, and they need to have a booster to go up. Lucid uses the Wunderbox for this. Tikon has a direct DC to DC booster that's 50 kilowatt as standard, optional 150 kilowatt. The Ioniq 5 does not use a separate piece of hardware. It's super interesting. On the rear motor, the inverter and the rear motor are connected as one. So what it does is when you plug in a 400 volt charger, it feeds the power through the inverter and then basically regens the battery at up to 100 kilowatts on a 400 volt system. So if you're at a Tesla supercharger, like for example, if you know once they open up the network at supercharged, they're 400 volt max. If we ever open these in the US or in Europe, you get 100 kilowatts with no extra hardware on a 400 volt capped charger, and it's just basically full regen. It's the coolest thing.
Right on. Hey, we have some big news coming up, but I just want to mention this as well. I just got this email today, and that BrightDrop has delivered its first 5 trucks to FedEx, and I'm showing some video here on the screen. Oh, there it is. Like, where is it? Where is it? It showed actually being the truck being delivered inside another truck. And yeah, I just thought this was great because I wasn't expecting to see this yet. You know, the BrightDrop is like GM's commercial vehicle thing, like kind of like the Rivian is making vans for Amazon. BrightDrop is making trucks, delivery trucks for FedEx and others, and they've just delivered their first 5. So I thought that was kind of neat news to share with you as well this morning. And you can see it rolling off the. That's awesome. I haven't watched this video, this footage yet, so I'm kind of excited to see it. That's great. Okay, and anyway, I'll stop that for now. So big news. A few weeks ago, I was at the Toyota Evolution 2.0 event where they showed off the bZ4X. Though the presentation there did spend some time defending Toyota's the electrified vehicle strategy that has consisted primarily of hybrids over the last decade or so, it was mentioned that there would be big news coming about battery electric vehicles. Well, that news has arrived. On Tuesday, Toyota CEO Akio Toyoda hosted an event that laid out the highlights of the company's electric vehicle product strategy for Toyota and Lexus. It was somewhat remarkable in that they showed off 15 vehicles, mostly concepts, representing about half of the EV products they plan to introduce by 2030. So included in that number, by the way, was the Lexus RZ450E that we'd previously seen only covered in camo. So that was sort of its like debut. So we can talk about some of these vehicles in a moment, but I just wanted to mention also the battery strategy they announced. Okay, that covers that. Since they didn't talk about any battery strategy beyond mentioning that they are working on some solid-state cells, they did, however, say they are targeting 3.5 million electric vehicles a year by 2030. So if those are average like 75 kilowatt hours per vehicle, say, and they could be bigger, that could be higher, it could be lower, probably higher, I would think. But so Toyota would need to produce or procure 262 gigawatt hours of batteries per year by 2030. So by comparison, Volkswagen Group is planning on having 6 factories in Europe to produce 240 gigawatt hours by 2030. So Tesla is going to have to at least match or surpass those efforts to reach this goal that they've announced. So before we get into the vehicles and whether or not we think this is just a PR exercise, I should mention that GM, like Cadillac, Toyota has chosen its premium brand Lexus to be the EV vanguard, although its timeline is not as aggressive as Cadillac's. So by 2030, it says Lexus aims to in quotes, Lexus aims to realize a full lineup of BEVs in all vehicle segments and to have BEVs account for 100% of vehicle sales in North America, Europe, and China. So that should be about 1 million vehicles. And then battery electrics are targeted to be 100% of sales by 2035. So before we're going to look at just some of these vehicles real quick, but before we do, Martin, you're probably one of our most critical voices here of Toyota. What did you make of this announcement? Like, do you see it as a PR event or a believable roadmap to electrification?
Well, look, Toyota is making electric vehicles. They've got an EV launching in China next year that's going to be a Corolla-sized vehicle. They're using all of BYD's tech for that. So they've gone, you know, they haven't got any of their own tech to use there, or if they have, they're not using it. So
the Lexus 300E over there too, right?
Right. So they've gone cap in hand to BYD to get that solution. And so that's launching next year already, which I don't think they talked about as part of this an announcement. So that's their battery strategy for China, BYD, because they haven't got any battery production to speak of their own. Announcements are always really welcome. And as we've seen increasingly, we've joked before about GM and getting into bed with Nikola, and we're always laughing about that. And did nobody do their due diligence? We've poked the likes of GM, but in the last couple of weeks, when you've had people like President Biden saying, "Hey, Mary Barra, you have electrified the entire car industry." And then a couple of days later, she did an appearance and where she said, "Yeah, we're leading the way." I've kind of got to that point now. That was the final straw for me. You don't even sell any electric cars, GM, because the two that you did have are all being refitted for batteries.
Right. There's no production happening.
So they're not in production. So even the Bolt and the EV are not on sale. So I'm at the point now of just saying, stop it. No one believes you. It's just nonsense. And so Toyota coming out in 2020, they said they're going to make 15 EVs by 2025. This week's announcement, they're going to make 30 EVs by 2030. And I was like, well, you've doubled the time span and doubled the amount of EVs. Okay, carry on as you were. So we just don't need to see them make the cars, and let's drive the cars and we'll assess them when they arrive. But yeah, it's, I don't want to be anti-Toyota, but the last couple of weeks, I've become very anti-announcement. We've joked about it before. We've laughed about these OEMs that make announcements, and we're like, oh, you know, make the cars first, and we'll. But now I'm to the point of just make the cars. They've got so many. We've just done an hour on really cool cars that are on the market.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Hey,
right.
Toyota. Hey, you make them. We'll drive them. We'll give them a fair crack of the whip. You've done some pretty terrible stuff in terms of your marketing, spending. You know, goodness knows how much money with campaigns like their We Choose Not to Plug In campaign,
right,
which not only promotes their hybrids, but actively disses electric cars. I got no problem with advertising hybrids, but they've gone out of their way to make it look like driving an EV makes you a second class person.
Right. And that We Choose Not to Plug In thing was, I don't understand how that ever got
greenlit.
Here's
what it is. That's their marketing decision. People change, people resign, people get promoted, whatever. There'll be a different team of people in however many years when they got to sell EVs. And they'll be like, well, we didn't mean it at the time. So good luck, Toyota. I mean, people don't have that long of memories. Look, if they make the best car out there at the best price, people will buy it. Even if you, not everyone's, I won't buy another VW because I owned a VW during Dieselgate and I felt lied to. Right. And so I choose to spend my own money elsewhere, but not everyone's like that. People are like, right. Hey, you make the best car, I'll buy a Toyota. So wait and see what they come with.
Right.
I like how Martin prefaced that whole speech with, I don't like to be anti-Toyota.
I'm sorry.
Sure,
I'm not that sorry. Sorry, not sorry.
And really quick point that I want to make on this. They said that, you know, by 2030, they want to sell three and a half million Toyota plans on selling 3.5 million EVs. If they don't increase their annual global sales, which they will, they've been on the course to do that every year, based on, say, last year's sales, that would be about 30 to 33% of their overall sales.
Right.
So they're saying by 2030, their goal is to get to 30, 33% sales. If you look at what many of the other automakers have said, it's mostly higher than that. Some have pledged to be completely EV by that. So, you know, while it looks great to have this stage with all of these like mock-up vehicles that we have no information whatsoever on, we know they're not drivable vehicles, you know, and say, look, we're going to make the Toyota Tacoma. We're going to make this really cool sports car. We're going to make all these crossovers. Look at this. We love electrics. You know, it's still lip service as far as I'm concerned. But hey, they want to run the company any way they want. That's fine. I just think they're going to come up on the short end 10 years from now. I think they're going to be saying shoulda, woulda, coulda.
These are all blacked out windows. They're not real cars. You can't see inside these vehicles. You know what?
No,
you know,
they're renderings. Look at the Lexus. It's matching.
No. I must admit, cars. I did watch. I know that I give them a hard time.
They walked
time.
Amongst them. You know,
yeah, like, did you see how the one is melting into the ground?
I know. This picture isn't good.
No, no, no. Go back to the same one you just had. Okay. Look on the right side. The Lexus, the wheels are halfway into the ground.
Admittedly, that's not a great shot. That's a rendering. Right.
That's the BRZ, though. That, I mean, so that's the one car that they actually have, isn't it? Yeah. No, that's not the BRZ. That's not it.
That's not the BZ.
Okay. Yeah.
No. But I did watch the live stream because they subtitled it. Right. And so I did give them the time of day, and it was a big announcement. And then they had those vehicles at the front. They were talking, Akio Toyota was talking in front of those. And then they dropped the curtain, and all the ones behind were revealed. They were actually... They've made them in the metal. They're not real cars, obviously, but they have made something out of metal to show and walk amongst them. Did a long press Q&A afterwards, which was then had a translator. They played in some video of him driving the new Lexus electric vehicle, prototype form, covered in camo. And he's driving it. And the head of Toyota is going, "Wee!
Right.
Woo!" He's like, "Electric power is unlike anything I've driven." I'm paraphrasing. This is so amazing. And like... You wonder, like, dude, have you driven an electric car? Because the video that you're putting out to promote what you're doing makes it sound like this is your first time. And he's like, "Wow, the power is instant."
Right.
And I'm like, you're either a really good actor or you've never driven an EV.
I'm pretty sure. Well, he has. He's driven with Elon Musk before in some cars. But yeah, in that video you speak of, he's just talking. He's driving along. And it feels kind of heavy. You know, it's kind of like a, which is, you know, it does probably feel pretty heavy. And then he like, you know, puts his foot into it and he's like, "Nani kore?" Like, what's this, you know, or WTF really.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah. But yeah, it was kind of amusing. I think it was some acting involved, but you know, when you're driving along and you put your foot down and it, you know, a lot of electrics, like the ones that we had at Kyle's event a couple weeks ago, you know, you put your foot down. It throws you back. It's kind of easy to emote like that, I think. I enjoyed that video a little bit myself. But
Elon gave him a Roadster back in the day.
He gave him a Roadster?
Yes. Yeah, I remember that. One of the original Roadsters Elon gave him. So, you know, if he's acting like he was surprised that there's instant torque, as Martin said, or Dominic, I forget who said, he's either lying or, you know, he's just never drove in an EV before. Yeah, they have one of the original Roadsters. Elon gave it as a gift to Toyota.
Huh, right on. Someone says they didn't know Dominic knew Japanese. Chotodake. Anyway, just a little bit.
Hey, we could make this show bilingual, pick up the Japanese YouTube audience.
I'm not, hey. I'm not very
That's how we're getting rich, boys.
I don't know enough to get myself in trouble, basically. Not enough to get out.
That sounds ominous.
All right, so let's talk about the Lexus 450e for a moment. So it's a crossover. It shares the
wait. Hold on. Oh. It's a four. What? It's the RZ.
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 Right. Yeah. RZ.
I was just wondering what size of Lexus. Now we got a photo. I got it. Sorry.
Okay. The RZ 450e, and funny, it's like the 450 is being used here because Mercedes EQS is 450 plus.
No, well, Lexus has used 450 in everything. It's just part of their nomenclature.
Right. Yeah. But it's also, and who else? Well, we saw the Cadillac Lyric. Somebody tweeted us a picture this week with a Cadillac Lyric. We had a 450.
I don't think it has to do with anyone else. I think it's internal naming structure.
Right. It's just a coincidence. I know. It's just like a thing. I thought it was whatever. I'll move on. It's a crossover. It shares the ET&J platform with the Toyota BZ4X and Subaru Solterra. And So this is the Lexus RZ 450E. It'll be the first Lexus EV available in North America, at least. I think you have one that's made in China that's available in Europe now. So this is like sits on the same platform as the BZ4X and the Solterra, but it's got, unlike those two, it's got totally different bodywork, and it keeps a semblance of the Lexus spindle grille without actually having a grille. It probably has like a different interior from those other two cars as well. I really like the lines on the outside of this. I think it looks pretty nice. Inside EV's editor Andre Nadalia wrote about this car, and he hit on something I was wondering about myself. So he thinks this car will make similar power to the Lexus RX 450H, which is just over 300 horsepower. However, BZ4X and Solterra only make a little over 200 horsepower. That's even rear wheel drive or all-wheel drive or front-wheel drive or all-wheel drive. So, Kyle, what does your intuition tell you? Does this 450E designation pertain to power output?
Oh, no, it never has in the Lexus lineup before. Okay. You can buy an RX 450 that makes like 280 horsepower. This is just sort of the level is going to be probably above BZ4X, I hope. But definitely not anything to do with direct comparison to power level, I think.
Okay. So I was curious about this because, like, I don't know, I expect the Lexus to have decent performance and...
Yeah, but they never do. Lexus are always so slow. There's only one good, like, kind of quick Lexus, and it's LFA? The LC500. You get into I just drove a new Lexus hybrid. You know, we review them all the time, and it was honestly the slowest car I've ever been in. They're just Toyota drivetrain slapped in a Lexus. Sometimes you get the V6, whoa, 260 horsepower on a good day. Like, they're not fast. Okay. I don't expect this to be
except fast. For the LFA is like their supercar kind of deal.
Well, that was years and years ago. They went crazy, lost a whole bunch of money, and now I think they have an aversion to speed. They make an RCF, they make a GSF, although I think that went out of production. They make the LC500 on the luxury high-end side, right. But even then, they're significantly slower than their German counterparts.
Okay.
So they're never right up there in terms of numbers on paper. Not to say I don't love driving the Lexus F cars. The LC500 is one of my favorite all-time cars ever.
Right.
You know, with that great V8 up there, awesome car, but not fast.
All right. Anything else we want to say about the Lexus RZ? I'm not sure if we know much more about it.
Will it use CHAdeMO, says Leonard? Well, on the...
No.
Aria, which obviously is not, but you know, fellow Japanese car, they're putting CHAdeMO one side and CCS the other, so they might do that, I suppose. A lot of CHAdeMO.
In the US market, it's CCS only for
Aria. Yeah, over here, CCS. European market is CCS only, so maybe at home they'll do both because a lot of love for CHAdeMO, but no, anywhere but Japan, no.
Right, yeah, it's totally hard to say. Even in Japan, I don't know what they'll do over there, but
I think they'll
stick with CHAdeMO in Japan. Yeah,
yeah.
But even for the rest of the world, it's I3s. Everything has CHAdeMO over there.
You have to. That's
right.
I don't even know how many CCS stations there are, if there's any, in Japan. It's all CHAdeMO.
Yeah,
right. But I mean, all right. So. What else do we want to talk about here?
Oh, I do want to mention one thing about that Lexus, which is if you plan on buying one, buy a lot of paint protection film because you got a slab of paint going right down the front that is just going to pick up every rock. So, yeah, just if you want to keep it nice, paint protection film the front of that thing.
That could be said for like a lot of EVs too, right? Because there's no grill, a lot of, you know, just like bodywork right across the front of the car.
Yep, absolutely.
PPF is just like a lifesaver.
Yeah, if you care about your car staying nice for a long term, you know, some self-healing PPF, big fan, love it, protects your car. Really one of the best things you can spend money on if you want your car to visually still look nice.
So although they're still, most of these other vehicles they show are kind of concept-y, I did want to just talk about a couple of them real quick. So they had this one called the Toyota Sports EV electric concept that, you know, people have been comparing it to the next MR2 kind of thing. MR2 successor. Here's the Inside EV's headline for those watching this on YouTube. I don't know if it's going to be that, but we also say here in my notes that it's going to be co-developed with Lotus and possibly even built by them. I don't know. Martin, did you hear anything about this?
No, but again, I'd be surprised. What, they'd go to Geely and say,
Yeah, but they already work together on the current Lotus stuff. They all use Toyota engines.
Okay, yeah, well, maybe they do.
Yeah, the new Amira uses the Camry V6. They just slap a supercharger on it. Yeah, they've been using Toyota engines forever in their cars, so it seems reasonable to me.
That was nice. It was a cool-looking little sports car with a target top, and I don't know. I kind of liked it. It was not bad. Not the worst vehicle they had on display. Some of the styling, I don't know. I liked a lot of it, but some of it might be challenging for some people. The Lexus electrified sport concept was also an interesting one. Another sports car, of course, and it was kind of so this one would arrive only after the solid state batteries are available, and it's an LFA inspired halo sports car that they say in quotes symbolizes the future of the brand. So maybe Lexus is going to get speedier. I don't know. Maybe electrification can help them with that. The numbers on this that were given out, which are, you know, super early and not grounded in, you know, just I guess hopes and dreams. 0 to 100 in under 2.5 seconds, 100 kilometers an hour. That's so 62 miles, 0 to 60 under 2.5 seconds, which is plenty quick, and 430 miles or 700 kilometers of range. So that's pretty good, but again, only after solid-state batteries are available from Toyota. I don't know if anybody has anything they want to say about this.
Fair play to them for saying we can't make it till we have better technology.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. Blah. Now show us the cars. Yeah, it could promise anything you want. You know, yeah, in 2030, I'm going to... You know, me and Kyle are working on a car in his track down in North Carolina. It's going to go 0 to 100 in a second. It's going to have an 800-mile range, and it's going to be a
million-mile range.
Do you think we could push that far?
Yeah,
I don't know. That's unfortunate.
No, we'll do it.
You know, I got
to invest.
I got to be the grounded one in the partnership here. I think 500,000 miles is the most we're going to get out of it. But in any event, you know, and it'll run around Kyle's track in like 7 or 8 seconds. As long as the driver's good enough. So yeah, we're on this, guys.
Okay. I'll write you a check.
I'm sick of hearing it. Right, really now. Am. You know.
Okay, so let's just talk about one other vehicle they showed, and that's the pickup.
One more.
Yeah, because it looked like closer to production than most of the other vehicles. Because basically,
that's Tacoma. What does that look close to production?
Yeah,
it was Tacoma with a front fascia on it. Basically, it was like the same bodywork.
They just took a normal Tacoma and said, "Imagine if it was electric."
Right,
and black windows. Exactly. You know, I should do that. I have a Tacoma in my driveway. I'm going to black out the windows and say, "Look, me and Kyle built an electric Tacoma."
Right. Yeah. So, but it might be the next electric Toyota that we hear about. Coming up
we don't even have the first one on sale yet. The BZ4X you can't even buy right now.
Right, not yet. But just following on from that, I mean, electric trucks are a big thing, right?
I don't think we're going to work in practice for a lot of people.
Okay, but for I don't know. So anyway, in April, at the Shanghai Auto Show, Toyota was saying that this was, you know, going to be a thing, the electric truck, and here it is here. And there are rumors that Toyota will reveal a model like this year, 2022, that unifies the global Hilux model and Tacoma. But actually, I think that's only going to be a hybrid. And like you all say, I don't know when this is going to happen. So let's move on to another truck that is here that is being delivered now to customers. And that's the Rivian R1T. And I just want to mention that because Rivian announced that so they had their big third quarter, you know, financial thing yesterday with a call and everything. And so they basically lost $1.23 billion, which is a lot of money. But that's it was fully inspected and predicted in the company's recent IPO filing. So that's not really news. And, you know, a new company just expanding, you know, building out the factories and retail infrastructure and all that kind of stuff, you expect them to lose. They're going to lose money for a few years at least. Anyway, so that's not really news, but they also announced that they would be spending $5 billion to build a new factory in the state of Georgia. So its plant in Normal, Illinois is, it's just finished refurbishing it and producing vehicles now. It had been a Mitsubishi factory for many years, and that one is said to eventually produce 200,000 vehicles. They're still actually doing some work on the R1T line there, I believe. to ramp up more production. But this new facility in the South, the American South, will do double that, 400,000 vehicles once production is fully ramped up. Construction is set to begin next year, and the plant should start producing vehicles in 2024, so about 2 years of construction time. The site is it's just along Highway 20 east of Atlanta, about 45 minutes maybe from the airport, and supposedly covers 2,000 acres. So it's not just going to be vehicle construction. Rivian says that we'll eventually also manufacture batteries there. And that's about 4.5 hours for me, so I might have to invest in a drone and start making those factory flyover drone videos. So aside from that, Rivian also delivered its first R1S vehicles. They were to the CEO, RJ Scaringe, and his wife, I believe. So that's sort of news in a way, because we're really looking forward to seeing the R1S on the road, and it should be a pretty awesome vehicle. I don't know, maybe more awesomer than the truck, which Kyle and Tom, you've both driven. So that's something to look forward to. So I don't know, Tom, this is supposedly the biggest single economic development in the history of Georgia. So you've driven the truck. Do you think the company will be able to live up to these production expectations? So that's going to be like capacity for 600,000 vehicles by 2024, or starting 2020 until they ramp up.
Well, I mean, you know, start making vehicles. You know, it's like they've delivered them mostly just to employees. I think we got the first deliveries this week. A couple of them went out to non-employees, from what I understand. I think they were on some Reddit threads or whatever. It all sounds great. I drove the truck. I thought it was a great driving truck, but they need to start producing these things now. I think it's good that they're looking long-term now and building that second factory. I think that shows that they believe they're going to need it, which is good. The vans are going to take up a lot of production, I think, capacity. And, 150? 150,000 is the capacity of the normal Illinois plant.
They're going to get up to 200,000.
They can get up to 200,000. Yeah, I could see them, as long as things progress as well as they should, I could see them hitting that in the next couple of years. And, I'm sure they have other vehicles on their drawing board that we don't know about. And, you know, they're, you know, once they get to their third and or their fourth and fifth vehicles, they'd need that extra production capacity. So they know a lot more about what their plans are than we do. And the fact that they're investing in that second factory, you know, kind of tips their hand that, you know, they expect to need that capacity. So that, right. I think that's good news.
Right.
I interviewed an investor in Rivian. I don't do a lot of business stuff on my podcast. We talk about the cars and the things that are on the market, but clearly it's a big part of the world. Lots of people want to invest in these things. So I last Saturday on EV News Daily, spoke to Vitaly Golom from Drake Star Partners. Now he's mates with Matej Rimac. He advised him on early investment into that company, and he invested early into Rivian. And I said, well, what do you see in Rivian that makes you want to be an early investor? Long time ago, long before IPO. And he said, I think, knowing what he knows, I think they're building a 100-year company. And he is convinced that they are in it for the long term, and he likes what he sees. And that phrase to me, I was like, okay, well, you know a lot about this company, and you put your own money into it. And he sees them doing more than just these two vehicles. So that was his take. Oh, yeah.
They have to, and they have to go down market. They have to make vehicles that are more affordable if they want to sell that kind of volume.
Right. I mean, that this kind of production capacity, that's a lot of cars. So you need to have a model that people can afford that can, you know, can move that many vehicles.
Oh, absolutely. Even Tesla didn't really start selling a ton of vehicles until they brought out the 3 and the Y, you know, obviously, you know, I would assume Rivian has those plans. We just don't really know about them yet.
Right. All right. So let's move. Oh, I just want to mention that. So just since R1T deliveries have begun, and since they've gone public, just in the last few months, their orders for the R1T have really increased. They're up to 71,000 vehicles now, which is, I think, 28,000 more than they had a couple months ago. So, I mean, that's that's pretty impressive, but still not like 600,000 vehicles a year, kind of impressive. Or like if you look at the, so that's 71,000 vehicles on order for Rivian. I think the Ford F-150 Lightning is up to close to like a 200,000-ish now.
Yeah, they hit 200,000, stopped taking, they stopped taking reservations now.
That's right.
Because they just realized it's going to be so long to clear out what the what they already have.
Right. And the Tesla Cybertruck, of course, has like, I don't know, a million, 2 million, who knows. It's going to be a while before you even see that made. But, you know, there's a lot of interest in it, to say. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so let's talk about another truck real quickly then that we're going to see for the first time in 2022. We're going to see it's, so, okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. So GMT's is the Sierra Denali electric pickup truck. That's going to be, and there's not a whole lot to talk about this right now. It's basically the same vehicle as the Silverado that's going to be shown at CES coming up. So a few weeks, we'll get all the numbers on these Silverado, and those will probably apply to this. But I think we've already heard, like, what there's, we can look forward to like 400 miles of range for the top spec battery. There was some other, 400 miles of range. It's basically it's the Hummer EV, right? But maybe in a lighter package. So it's going to have four-wheel steering available, like the Hummer EV, a massive glass roof. It's going to be made at the Factory Zero facility in Detroit with the Hummer and the Silverado EV. So, yeah, I don't know. Anybody want to say anything about that? There's not a whole lot there. It's the front end of the...
Not a brand that we get here.
All right.
Not a surprise, you know, that you know, the BEVs are going to cascade across their whole platform, GM, so...
Okay, well, before we go then, let's talk about this other little car that I'm sure Kyle would love to have. I don't know if you can cue up that picture.
I can only imagine. Is it the Ami? Oh, no, not the one
not
I want.
That one.
I really
not
wanted the off-road Ami.
Citroën, l'Ami.
Martin, do you have a picture of the off-road Ami somewhere? I put it on my Twitter, and...
I have it right here in the show notes. If I can.
Oh, yeah. Is that way cooler than whatever this thing is? This just looks pretty ugly. But the... the Ami off-road beach buggy style. That's all me. That is so cool.
Let me bring this up real quick. Maybe
perfect daily driver here in Colorado.
There, and add to stream.
There it is. Look at that thing.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at a man. There's the car. And yeah, this is just the coolest. And so I guess, you know, sort of two car city solution, a Twizy chipped and then one of these for the lower speed commutes.
I don't know. What do you think, Tom? You like this?
I think Kyle already has it. His smart car goes everywhere that this thing goes. It just maybe doesn't look quite as cool.
And faster. So,
right.
This thing goes like 15 miles an hour or something, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't think you need that, Kyle. You've got everything you need with your electric smart.
That's
that
cool.
It looks cool, but you know what? You look cool in whatever you're driving.
No, I don't need to look cool. I just want to. I like it when there's always an interesting story to a car, especially when it's not, expensive. It's not like showing off, if you will. It's like, look at that. We can have fun with things on wheels, and that's what this is.
Go look at Alibaba. Little
kind of 12-inch wheels and a spare strap to the roof. I mean, what's not to love about this?
Yeah. I was driving something like that around when I was in the Maldives 2 weeks ago.
we shared that picture of you doing your super secret research
my BEV testing. That was a lot of fun. Right. Anyway, but Don, before we take off, I don't know if you're done with this story or not, but
yeah,
I just want to mention one last thing that I had the opportunity to do a couple weeks ago. I was at the Charin Association's Testival. Right. They do these. The Charin Association is this nonprofit global association that all the automakers are members of, it, and so are charging equipment companies and various other industry stakeholders. And it's to promote interoperability with the combined charging systems. Kind of like there's a CHAdeMO Association, and the Charin is the is the CCS Association, and they had these they call them testables, where they, it's a festival where they test equipment, and they have them all over the world. So they had the fifth annual US one just a few weeks ago, and they held it out in California. It was actually at Lucid's headquarters. Lucid just bought this big chunk of property next to their headquarters, and they weren't using it yet. It was this big giant warehouse that was empty. So it was a perfect place to hold this. What happens is all the, all the automakers get their cars together. Mostly cars that are either just coming to market or cars that are going to come to the market, because hopefully the cars that are already out on the market don't need to be tested that well. Hopefully they're functioning. And then all of the equipment suppliers, the charging station companies come, bring all of their chargers, DC fast chargers. This is all DC fast. And they set them up, and the cars just drive from one station to another, and they DC fast charge, and they record the charging session if there's any kind of anomalies, if there's overheating issues or whatever. So I got to see all these cars, some of them future cars that aren't even out yet or aren't even announced yet, really. I couldn't take any pictures inside this facility, and all these charging stations, and watch. And the coolest thing to me, at least, was, well, everything was cool about it. I mean, this was like total geek out. But the coolest thing was I was watching like Mercedes engineers comparing notes with BMW engineers, like pointing and saying, look, yeah, at this point here, we had this little anomaly, and they're working together. You don't see that much in the automobile industry. It's kind of, you know, walled off where we don't share trade secrets. But, you know, when I talked to a lot of the engineers and I talked to a lot of the people while I was there, and they were just like, look, you know, when we're here, we almost don't have a company that we're working for. We're engineers trying to solve problems. We're trying to make these vehicles communicate with all this different equipment flawlessly. And if I can help my competition, that's fine, because this whole industry, these things just need to work. You know, we can't have problems where people are pulling up to charging stations and the car doesn't communicate, or it shuts off at a certain state of charge for whatever reason, some kind of communication error. So they're all working together to make everything work. And it was really, to me, that was amazing. Everybody was there. Tesla was there with their CCS adapter and all the stuff they were testing, their vehicles on all the charging equipment. It was real. Rivian was there. Rivian had their yet to be released DC proprietary DC fast chargers. I mean, it was just, there were megawatt chargers out in the parking lot with buses, Volvo trucks, Proterra buses.
Nice.
Ford had the transits there. I mean, it was this thing. And the cool thing about it was, like, first of all, they don't invite the press. Right. It's not something that anybody's ever invited to. But I was in, I was at Lucid. This is when I did the charging test, and I knew this was going on. So I was kind of like, hey, it would be really cool if I could go over that. And they're like, yeah, they really don't invite people to that. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm here, and I like charging, and I know a lot of charging the people there, and I named some geek names of engineers that were there. I'm like, I know he's here. I know there's there, you know, I'd love to go over and say him. So they Lucid kind of, you know, went over and said, look, you know, Tom's here with us, and he'd like to come in or whatever, you know, and this is kind of our property. We're letting you use it. So we'd like to let him in this event. So they let me in, but I couldn't take pictures and all that stuff and everything. And it was freaking awesome. And Kyle would have loved it. It was just total geek out. And it's the cool thing about it is everybody that I was bumping into knew me and knew who I was. I mean, there were companies from China with their DC fast charging equipment. They're like, oh, Tom Alagadi, like, you know, you know, Inside EV, State of Charge,
you know, it was
really cool. And Spark Charge was there. I didn't know they were there. They make that mobile charging system. They were testing out their cars, and I actually talked to them for a while, and they were really super stoked, because they said all of the cars that they tested, they didn't have one blip on any vehicle. So they're like, this is what we need. You know, they're not like Electrify America has their own charging facility, you know, and they test all the vehicles. The manufacturers have to send the vehicles there. Most of them cooperate with Electrify America, send them to the facility months before they're available for the market. But a little company like Spark Charge, they don't get that opportunity. You know, Ford's not going to send them a Lightning to make sure that their portable charger works with that. So they had the opportunity to test all the vehicles, and they were like really stoked. They're like, yeah, we didn't have any problems. Every vehicle worked on our CCS system. And so it was really cool. I put an article up on it on Inside EVs. I got some quotes from people while I was there, some pictures that they fed me. They're not my pictures. I weren't allowed to take them. I wish I could have. There were some really cool things going on in there. But, you know, I understand why we weren't allowed to take pictures.
Real quick, BHM Bill asks, any wireless charging?
No.
Okay.
Any news yet on the agreed standard for commercial vehicle charging?
So that was being discussed, and I didn't really have the opportunity to interview people. I had to kind of be like a fly on the wall, Martin, because I don't think they were expecting media or press to be there. So I just really went up to the people that I knew. You know, I knew the folks at BMW. You know, I knew the folks at a couple other companies. So I went, and they were like, hey, you know, how are you doing here? You know, but it was cool that they talked to me. I know the focus was on plug and charge. That was a big focus to get all of the cars functioning with plug and charge. That was really what I think most of the manufacturers were communicating back and forth with each other. If they were seeing some type of an issue, some type of glitch in that handshake process, and they were working with each other on that. So, it was really cool.
That's what we didn't mention earlier. That press release from VW yesterday was not only about turning on V2G, but if you have an ID car, and they weren't specific about whether it was also MEB platform cars, it should be. Anyway, they said all ID cars get plug and charge turned on via an over-the-air update soon. So maybe something came out of that you were at, Tom, where they gave them the confidence to then put a timeline on it to say, right, we'll push the update, plug and charge, all the ID cars, it should start working. Hope so.
Yeah, that's going to make it awesome.
Yeah, I mean, and just think that there's so much equipment there. You should have seen how many DC fast chargers from so many manufacturers, ones that we really haven't even seen yet that are going to be coming to the market. And they all have slightly different software. You know, I mean, that's really the biggest problem. I mean, everybody talks about how good the supercharger network works, and it does, because Tesla is vertically integrated. They control everything. They build the cars. They write the software. They build the charging stations. If it didn't work, there'd be a freaking problem with that. But it's different with all the other vehicles. You have so many different companies, the different making the cars. Even each car is different within the same manufacturer. Then there's all these different companies making the charging stations. Then there's the software that runs the charging stations. Then there's the networks that have software on top of the software. So that there's so many things that can be wrong. And you know, if when you write code, just a little glitch in that throws things off. So that's why this is absolutely, necessary. And it was good to see that they're doing it. They do it multiple. They're having another one in a couple months somewhere in Europe.
Oh, sweet.
So this is something that just keeps going on and on and on, where the companies keep getting together, testing the latest equipment, testing the latest technology, trying to make sure this stuff works, because as we all know, it still doesn't work. You know, it's still a big problem, public charging on a lot of different stations and a lot of different networks. But, you know, they are out there trying to make this stuff work, guys.
Right. Good to hear. And it'd be great to get into one of those other future events coming up. All right. I think that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please, please, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube, and that'll help other people follow us or find us. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Malogny here at Tomalog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.
SpinQuest Social Casino. It's Thanksgiving time. The turkey's hot and the family's loud. Instead of football, play a different game on your phone. Live dealer blackjack, craps, and slots. Play anytime, anywhere. SpinQuest.com. This Thanksgiving, gobble up a $30 coin pack for just $10. Come play today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.